We're holding on Mem Vav Amud Beis, the next to last line of the narrow lines by the two dots. We learned in the Mishnah, the first case of the Mishnah was the case where a shur gores a parah, and then we find the fetus of the parah next to it. We don't know whether the fetus was also killed by the goring. In other words, whether the parah miscarried because of the goring, in which case the owner of the shur is chayiv for the fetus as well, or not. So the Mishnah had said that the Mishnah had said yachloiku, and we said that you pay then a quarter nezek as far as the vlad. We said that's only according to sumchos, and the chacham say amotzim chavel baraya, and we went into a discussion about that. So now the Mishnah had continued the other way around. If the parah gored the shur, and then we find the parah's baby next to it, and we don't know, was the baby still in the womb at the time when the damage happened? Where if it was, then as we're going to say soon in the Gemara, it's considered part of the mother, and therefore you'd be entitled to collect. We're talking about a tam over here, so you're collecting migufoi from the actual value of the animal. So then you'd be able to collect from the value not only of the mother but also of the baby, as opposed to if the baby was born before the goring, and therefore it had nothing to do with it, then you would only be able to collect from the mother. So the Mishnah had used the expression that you, again, following Sumchos, that you get chatzi nezek from the parah and a quarter of nezek from the vlad. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean chatzi nezek or revia nezek? What do you mean that you're getting a quarter of nezek plus half a nezek? Palgan nizku debari shalumi. After all, we're talking about a tam over here. All he has to pay is a quarter, or all he has to pay is half of the nezek, chatzi nezek. Why, in effect, the Mishnah sounds like it's saying that he's paying three quarters of the hezek. The kula niska nachi riva means the entire nezek minus a quarter, which is a that's a that's a common that's a common way that the Gemara forms numbers or and fractions and things like that. It's by saying that the amount minus some amount, I guess, you know, sort of the same way in English as, for example, as far as time, we say it's a quarter to five, let's say. So the same way here, they were saying the whole nezek minus one quarter, we would express it as three quarters of the nezek. Whatever the point is, why is the nezek collecting three quarters of the nezek when it's only, we're talking about a tam over here, so all they're supposed to be collecting is chatzi nezek. So why is the Mishnah saying you collect half nezek from the parah and a quarter nezek from the vlad? In fact, there's a different girsa. The Ravid has a different girsa over here that the Gemara is understanding that the parah and the vlad belong to different people, as the Gemara is going to go on to say soon. So therefore, in that case, then you shouldn't even be paying full chatzi nezek, because given again our Mishnah is according to Sumchus, and you have a suffix over here whether it was the parah alone that did it or the parah plus the baby, then maybe the owner of the parah shouldn't even be paying full chatzi nezek. Anyway, Omer Abaya. So Abaya answers, chatzi nezek really means echad me'abob nezek. When we say in the Mishnah chatzi nezek that you're getting from the parah, it really means a quarter of the nezek. What it means, the Gemara is going to ask about that soon. The fact is, it says chatzi nezek, but first Abaya is explaining that it means, in other words, given that there is a partnership over here, given that there is, as the Gemara is going to talk about soon, that the mother animal and the baby belong to different people. So there, and therefore, we have a suffix whether both of them were involved in the nezek or only one of them, because we don't know what did the goring take place before or after the baby was born. So when we say chatzin nezek means really echad me'abob nezek, really means we're saying that one quarter of the nezek is to be paid out of the parah. Because, in other words, what we would say is, it's a tam over here. If we knew for a fact that the parah alone was the one that did it, then the owner of the parah would be paying full chatzi nezek. Because of the suffix, then therefore he's paying only a quarter of that. And revia nezek, echad mishmoyde benezek. And as far as when it says that you get a quarter of the nezek from the vlad, really what it means is you're getting one eighth of the nezek. Same logic, in other words, because of the suffix. Tosfos actually points out that it's not really necessarily a quarter in the case of the baby. Really, all it is you have to prorate, you have to figure out what the value of the para is with and without the Vlad, and then, so to speak, you attribute a certain percentage of the you attribute the appropriate percentage of the value of the nezek to the Vlad. Tosfos gives the example. Let's say, for example, the para alone is worth 80 without the Vlad. When it's pregnant with the Vlad, it's worth 100. So now if the full chatzi nezek that it has to pay is 100, so it gored and killed another animal worth 200, and now chatzi nezek is 100, then we would say we attribute 1/5 of that that damage to the baby, because the baby is worth 1/5 of the total value of mother plus baby. So therefore, then we would say that, we get 1/10. So we get in that particular case, we would say 10 is paid out of the baby, 10 being 1/10 of the total, but it's 1/4 of the nezek that we're attributing to the Vlad, because we're saying in effect that the Vlad, we're saying in effect that the mother did 160 worth of the damage and the Vlad did 40, and therefore we're cutting it down. We're saying that the owner of the mother is paying only 40, only a quarter of the nezek, and the owner of the baby is paying only a quarter of what the nezek that the baby did, which would be 10 out of 40. So it's not really, strictly speaking, 1/8. It would be, it depends really on the respective values of, on the relative values of the mother and the baby. So that's how Abaya explains. Now, continues Abaya, the e parav of Uvlad, the chad ninhu. Now, if the mother and the baby both belong to the same person, then there's not really much of a, then there's not really much of a nafkamine. Hochinami, the motzi omle labal para, mimonafsha chatzi nezakavli. Because if the mother and the baby both belong to the same person, then the nizik can say to the mazik, look, one way or the other, whether the baby was involved or whether the mother was involved, either way, I'm entitled to chatzi nezik. So therefore, we wouldn't necessarily factor in the baby, but we would say that as long as the chatzi nezek is less than the value, is less than or equal to the value of the parah herself, then we would do that, and that would be that. Ella loit sricha. So the Mishnah is only needing to tell us the case. Says Abaya, the para dechad of Vlad dechad, where the para belongs to one person and the Vlad belongs to a different person. Rashi explains. Suppose, for example, that Reuven sold the animal to Shimon and said, "I'm selling you the mother, but I'm keeping the baby for myself. So once the baby is born, then you're going to give it back to me." So now they belong to two different people. And here's a further distinction, says Abaya. The edikodim tave labal para tchila. If you were to go take the owner of the para to Beis Din first, so now let's draw out the scenario over here. We have Reuven owns a para. Shimon owns the Vlad because Reuven was the original owner of both of them. Reuven sold the mother to Shimon and reserved the baby for himself. So now Shimon is the owner of the para, Reuven is the owner of the Vlad. Now this animal, this para went and gored Levi and killed Levi's animal. And again, we don't know whether the para that belongs to Shimon had done that before it gave birth to the baby that belongs to Reuven or not. So now, if he goes and takes the owner of the para, Shimon, to Beis Din first, Hochinami, to Amalei Labal Para, then indeed there might not be much of a nafkamina, because he would be able to say to Shimon, the owner of the para, look, para didach azikton, your para damaged mine, havli raya di islach shutvi. So you want to say that you shouldn't have to pay full chatzi nezek, adraba hamotzi machvel varaya. So then you, or not hamotzi machvel varaya, we're following sumchas in our mission over here. So we would say then, you want to claim that there's somebody else who joined in the nezek over here, namely that Reuven, who owns the baby, is also jointly responsible. Well, bring proof that he is in fact jointly responsible. And without that, then you're high of the full. Then you're high of the full chatzin nezek. So there still wouldn't be that much of a nafkamina then if that were the scenario. Then there still wouldn't be much of a nafkamina whether we're collecting exclusively from the para or from the para plus Vlad. Ella de kodim tave labal Vlad tchila. Rather, we have to assume that Levi first takes Reuven, the owner of the Vlad, to Beis Din first. So now Shimon, the owner of the potter, can say, Galus Adaitas, the shut for Isli. I see by the way that you acted that you're taking Reuven to Beis Din first. That shows that you recognize that I have a partner in it. Is that you're in effect saying, it's almost like Hadas Baal Din, that I wasn't the exclusive, that I wasn't the one exclusively responsible for this nezek, that it took place while the animal was still pregnant, and therefore that Reuven and I are partners in it. Well, that being the case then, I shouldn't have to pay the full chatzi nezek. So you're going to, so between the two of us, between me and Reuven, then fine. One of us will pay. I, the owner of the potter, will pay only Revia, and the owner of the Vlad will pay his portion. You may not get full chatzi nezek out of it because of the suffix of whether I owe all of it or not. So that would be what the Mishnah is telling us then, in effect, that in that case, then you're not necessarily going to be able to collect full chatzi nezek, because you're going to try to collect chatzi nezek exclusively from Shimon, the owner of the para, and he's going to answer back that by the way that you did things, where you took Reuven to Beis Din first, that shows that you agree that Reuven is partly responsible. Now Reuven in turn is claiming that he's not responsible. He's saying that it took place after the mother had given birth, and therefore the baby's not involved. Well, in that case, then momen amutubas safek kloken. So he's not going to be responsible to pay any more than the percentage for the baby, and I shouldn't have to be responsible for the whole thing, because I can also claim that, and the way that you did things bears out that you agree as well that Reuven is partially responsible as well. Tosfos also points out, now later on in the Perek, we're going to have a case which we mentioned earlier in the Masechta, where there are two people involved in a hezek, namely where Reuven's shur pushed Shimon's shur into Levi's pit. So then we have the opinion of Reb Nosson over there that you say that you collect whatever you can from the owner of the shur, and but maximum is going to be chatzi nezek, and then you collect the rest from the owner of the bur. In that case, you might not even be able to collect full chatzi nezek from the shur, because it's only a contributing factor, as we'll see in the Gemara in a couple of days. But here the difference is that the fact is, there the bur killed the shur. Here, if the baby was in the mother's womb at the time, then it was directly involved in the killing, and if not, then it wasn't. So even Reb Nosson might say that you can't say that I'm going to collect whatever I can from you, owner of the parda, and whatever I can't, I'm going to collect from the owner of the baby, or vice versa. We can't necessarily say that. So he's not going to end up collecting full chatzi nezek. Some say that according to Abaya's explanation, you would actually say it wouldn't matter which one he took to Beis Din first. Afagav de kodim tave labal pora tchila. We could say that even if he took the owner of the pora to Beis Din first, still hachinami. Still, Motzi Madchile, the owner of the potter, would still be able to push him off and to say, you don't have a solid proof that I should have to be paying full chatzi nezek. Because he can say, look, you may not have acted in such a way that demonstrates that you think I have a shutuf. You took me to Beis Din implying that you think I'm the only one, but made a yadi anod the shutuf easily. I know that I have a shutuf. I know that I have that there's a Vlad involved over here as well. I know, or at least I'm making a claim that the mother gave birth only after the goring, only after the negicha, and therefore that Reuven and I jointly have to pay this nezek. So therefore, according to that way of looking at it, it wouldn't matter which one Levi took the Beis Din first. Tosfos points out, after all, you have a chazaka until now that the cow was pregnant, and therefore we have so it's called chazaka de meikra. We have a chazaka that to begin with it was pregnant. Now we know the status has changed. Then the owner of the pora has every right to claim that it took that change in status took place only after the goring, and therefore that he and the owner of the Vlad are jointly responsible or whatever they're between the two of them, they're responsible for the chatzi nezek And Tosfos says, Sumchos would say then, look, you have a chazaka over here, and you have cheskas gufoy. So therefore, the result is the owner of the para would be paying only a quarter, says Abaya, and the owner of the vlad would be paying no more than 1/8. Okay, so that's all Abaya's explanation of the Mishnah. So again, Abaya's explanation is based on the idea that when the Mishnah is saying 1/2 and 1/4 respectively, it doesn't actually mean that. It really means a half of a half and a half of a quarter respectively. The problem with that is, Amar Rava, Echad Me'abav Benezek, Echad Otu, Echad Me'abav Benezek, Ve'echad Meshmoinu Benezek Katani. Does the Mishnah say anything about a quarter and an eighth? Chatzi Nezek or Revi'a Nezek Katani? The fact is, the Mishnah says a half of a Nezek and a quarter of a Nezek. So how can you reinterpret the Mishnah to be saying something completely different? Rather, Rava says, no, we are talking about actually where the mother and the baby both belong to the same person. And when the Mishnah says that he gets half Nezek from the Parah and a quarter Nezek from the Vlad, it doesn't mean both. It doesn't mean that he gets both a half plus a quarter, because you're right. There's no reason he should be getting more than a half. We're talking about a time over here. Rather, what it means is, and what we mean is, Isal Parah, if the Parah is available to get paid from, Mishtalim Chatzi Nezek Mi Parah, then he gets half Nezek out of the para, less a para. And if the para is not available, for example, it died, it ran away, whatever it is, Mishtalim, via Nezek Mivlad, then he's going to be able to pay. Then, so now he wants to collect from the Vlad. So again, given that we're talking about a time over here, you're paying only Migufoy. So the maximum he can get will be a quarter Nezek from the Vlad, because of necessity, the Vlad didn't do it all by itself. Necessarily, the most that could have happened is that the Vlad did it in concert with the mother. And since the mother is not available anymore, then therefore you can only collect part of the Nezek from the Vlad, namely 1/4. So when the Mishnah says a half and a quarter, it doesn't mean and, it means or. Either he's collecting half Nezek from the Parah, or if the Parah is not available, then he can collect only a quarter of Vlad, or then he can collect only a quarter of Nezek from the Vlad. So Rashi points out that what that indicates is that Rava understands, as the Gemara is going to say now, it means that the Vlad is considered part of the goof of the is considered part of the goof of the mother. So Rashi also adds, even if the Vlad were to be worth all by itself the entire Chatzi Nezek, he still, since the mother is not available to collect from, and he's only collecting from the Vlad, the maximum he can collect from the Vlad would be a quarter Nezek. If the mother is not available, he is going to forfeit. He's not going to be able to collect any more than that. Well, the Gemara says, Taima d'lo yadin, and he have a Vlad badok, nog chayiloi have a. So what does it mean? The implication is, because we don't know whether the baby was in the mother's womb at the time, then therefore, that's why we're saying, and again, this is all following Sumchus. Tosfos points out, this also wouldn't really work according to, we had the machlokas before of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Whether according to Rabbi Shmuel, you're just owed a certain amount of money, or whether we're talking about according to Rabbi Akiva, that you actually become the owner or the part owner of the animal itself that caused the nezek. Now we learned in that connection a couple of weeks back that according to Rabbi Akiva's opinion, we would say that if the animal goes up or down in value during that time, then they both split the proceeds accordingly. So you can't say over here, if the parah is not available, then you're collecting only a quarter Nezek from the Vlad. Of necessity, we would have to say that Rava is saying over here is not only according to Sumchus, but that, again, following the point that our Mishnah that mentions that you're dividing the Nezek in the first place, according to Sumchus, but on top of that, it would be only according to Rabbi Shmuel, because according to Rabbi Akiva, we would say that he's considered a part owner of the, according to Rabbi Akiva, he's considered a part or complete owner of the mother once the Nezek took place, and therefore, if the mother died, then that's on him, and if the mother is otherwise unavailable, then that's also on him, or at least partly on him. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Taima d'lo yadin, and he have a vlad b'hadar ki nogcha iloi have." So what are we saying? Because we don't know whether the baby was in her womb at the time when she caused the nezek or not, that's why we're saying that the maximum you can collect from the vlad, according to Sumchus, would be a quarter nezek. Aval ipshit londa have a Vlad Bahadur. If we knew for a fact that the Vlad was in her at the time, kinogcha, when she gored, mishtalam kule chatzinezik mi Vlad, then the implication is you would be able to collect the entire chatzinezik from the Vlad if the parah wasn't available. And what does that mean? So it means that Rava is going according to his own svara. The Amar Rava, where Rava says you have such a din. Para sheizika gova mevlada. If a para causes damage, you're able to collect from its vlad. And exactly a case like this, but a case where there's no suffix. Let's say we know for a fact that it was pregnant at the time that it caused the hezek. So then we'd say that you are in fact allowed to. Now you are in fact able to collect from the Vlad, and even the full Chatzinezek, only in the case of our Mishnah, where it's a suffix whether the Vlad was involved or not, can you not collect full Chatzinezek from it. But if we knew that it was pregnant at the time, you would be able to. My time a gufahi, because the baby is considered part of the guf of the mother. So therefore, when we say that you collect for a tam, the gufai, then that gufai includes the unborn baby. On the other hand, continues Rava, Tanegoilas Shehizika. On the other hand, if a chicken were to cause hezek, ene goiva mibet sasa, then you can't collect from the egg of it that it was carrying at the time. My time, a pirsha ba'almahu, because the egg is not really considered a part of the chicken; it's just considered a separate thing. So therefore, it's not part of the goof. Now, Tosfos has a bit of discussion about both of those points. We do find in some places where we say uber yerech imayhu, where we say that a baby is considered like part of the mother. On the other hand, we seem to have places that we don't say that. So Tosfos says when it comes to treifa, if let's say for example the mother was a treifa and she's carrying a baby, the baby doesn't become treifa because of that, because the baby after all has a life of his own. So you can't say when the mother became treifa, then automatically the baby does as well. But other than that, for the most part, we usually say that that uber yerech imayhu, or at least according to Rava, and that is the halacha. As far as the egg, technically there might be cases where the egg is so fakir. We say there are cases where the egg is considered part of the mother in connection with a trefa. In fact, if a chicken that's trefa lays eggs, then the eggs are also to eat. So Tosfos points out really what it is because you have to really distinguish the egg starts out. I mean, it starts developing in the bird's ovaries, and over time, eventually it separates from the mother, and eventually it becomes a separate thing with a shell of its own and everything inside the chicken, and eventually then it lays it. Now you may have a point. So if the injury or whatever it is that made the animal a trefa, that made the chicken a trefa, took place while the eggs are still attached, then of course the eggs are going to be considered part of the mother. The point is, though, we always have a suffix. We can't see inside the chicken to know at what stage of development the eggs were at any given point. So therefore, so when it comes over here, you would say you can't say for sure that the eggs were you can't say for sure what stage of development the eggs were in at the time of the nezek. Maybe it was at a late enough point in the development of the egg where it's separated from the ovaries and separated from everything else and ready to be laid. And in the case of Terefus Fakir, we might have to say that it might have still been connected. It might have been still attached to the various ducts over there as it's developing, and therefore would be considered part of the goof of the chicken. So in both cases, we have to treat it as, in the different cases as part of the chicken or not, depending on the circumstances. I mean, you have, incidentally, you know, you have, if you shech the chicken and you find eggs inside it, as long as the eggs are fairly developed, then technically they're considered par, they're not considered part of the chicken, and you are allowed to eat them with milk. But again, it really depends on their stage of development, and those halachas are not so simple. I think there are, in fact, poskim who say that regardless, we should always consider chickens, that we should always consider eggs found inside a chicken to be misuffic, to be part of the chicken itself, and therefore you wouldn't be able to eat them with meat, or with milk. Okay. V'omar Rava. Rava says, here's another din. As here's another din as far as mother and baby animals. When it comes to evaluating the damage, we don't figure the value of the mother by herself and then the value of the baby by itself, because the baby by itself, once it's born, has a higher value. Rather, what we do is we consider, how do we evaluate the value of the baby? We consider the difference in value between when the mother was pregnant versus now when she's not. And Rava says, if you don't say like that, then it comes out that you're causing extra damage to the mazik. You're ruining his position, because then you're saying the vlad is worth more than it otherwise would be, and therefore the mazik is going to end up. Therefore, the mazik may end up paying more, because Rashi says that Rava's case over here is actually talking about the resha. We're not talking about the sefer where we're talking about collecting from the vlad. We're talking about the resha where the shur had killed the mother and injured the mother, and also she had miscarried, and we don't know whether the miscarriage happened as a result of the goring or not. So Rava is saying, if we were to consider, well, the value of the mother is 100. The baby, once it's born, is worth 50. So therefore, we have both mother and baby are dead now. Therefore, the full nezek is 150, and half of that is 75. No, we don't do that. Rather, what we figure is the mother without being pregnant is worth 100. The mother, when she's pregnant, is worth 120. So therefore, we consider that the full nezek in that case would be 120, and half of that would be 60. Because otherwise, it comes out that you're causing a loss to the mazik because you're making him pay more than he otherwise should have. And continues Rava, you have a similar kind of thing if one person cuts off the hand of somebody else's eved. So we don't figure out. Now, later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about how we evaluate Nezek and Sire and all the rest of those things. We don't evaluate the hand separately. We don't say, in other words, how much would a person be needed? How much would you have to pay a person for him to be willing to have the hand of his Eved cut off? We don't do that. Because then again, that would be a huge amount of money. Why would I want to maim my Eved like that only if you pay me an enormous amount of money? So rather, what we do is we figure out how much was the Eved worth before with two hands, and how much is he worth now with one hand. So similar thing. You find a similar thing when one person's animal is mazik somebody else's field. Same idea. We don't say that we figure out the value of the individual plot that the animal damaged. And Rashi points out in the next parak that would also inflate the value of it, because if you figure the value of an individual plot like that, who are you going to sell it to? Only to somebody who can't afford to buy a full field, so he's buying one individual plot. And then you'd raise the price accordingly, because you're selling it piecemeal like that. So again, that would end up making that you're evaluating the nezek as greater than it is. So again, the same thing. You figure out, and we'll learn the details of this in the next parak, Bas Hashem, is you figure out how much was the field worth with this plot intact versus how much is it worth without it. And therefore, that brings down the amount that the mazik has to pay, because practically speaking, if you were in the market to buy a field and you had two available to you, one where all the crops are intact and one where a bit of the crops are damaged, obviously you'd get a discount, but it wouldn't be that much of a discount. So in all those cases, we don't want to be makhish as a mazik. Tosfos has some discussion over here. You also have, as far as Dmei Volodis, that we're going to talk about later on in the Perek, the case which we talked about in the previous Perek, and we're going to talk about in more detail further in our Perek, where Shur gores a pregnant, where two people are fighting, we said, and then a pregnant woman gets caught in the crossfire and she gets hit and she miscarries, and the one who hit her has to pay Dmei Volodis. And there you also have a similar kind of thing where we say we figure out how much is she worth without being pregnant. Suppose we were to sell her as a slave woman, and how much she's worth now, and how much she's worth pregnant.
And so you have a similar, so you have a similar kind of thing. Tosafist says, though, that no, the fact is that the difference is, unlike the cases we're talking about over here, the shirt, the potter, the eved, the field, which are all the mammon of the owner, the woman's body is not the mammon, it's not her husband's mammon. So therefore, we can't say that we should figure out in that way. No, there we consider the value of the babies separately. We'll learn more about that, Be'ez Hashem, in a couple of days. Anyway. So omelet of acha bread the rova lo rav Ashi. So sort of acha bread the rova asked rav Ashi, why? What's the problem? Ve'idinahu. If the din is that the guy has to pay, l'chush mazik. So what? Let the mazik lose out. What do we care? The fact is, we should be. We why should we say, for example, in the case of the in the case of the para with or without being pregnant. The fact is, we have a dead para over here. We have a dead vlad over here. We're saying according to Sumchos that. We're saying according to Sumchos that you have to split the value of the Vlad because you have to split the Nezik of the Vlad because we can't be sure. According to the Chachamim, fine, I'm Otzim Chavela Varaya, but rather Rava's case would be if we know for a fact that the Vlad was killed by the Goring, then why shouldn't we make him responsible for the full value of the Vlad after it's born? And the answer is Mishum D'Amalei, because the Mazik can say, because the mazik can say, look, the damage that I caused you was that my animal killed a pregnant cow of yours. Therefore, I should only be responsible to. Therefore, I should only be responsible according to the value of a pregnant cow. I shouldn't have to pay separately for the vlad. So it's not really a matter of to be maker on the mazik. It's that is the actual din that the mazik has every right to argue that we should go according to the how things were at the time of the hezek rather than evaluate how things would have been later on. Okay. Now the Gemara says pshita. Now here's another thing we have to consider in this connection. When we have that the para that again we're saying we figure out the value of the para and how much value it lost as a result of it having been gored by the shur, and then we figure out the baby. So we have to consider pshita para dechad vlad dechad. Now it will be obvious that if the para belongs to one person and the vlad belongs to a different person, then we can consider, you have to distinguish between pitma, you have to consider the fatness of the animal. When the animal is pregnant, it has more fat on it, and that brings up its value. So obviously the bala para, obviously that extra value that's because of the fatness is going to belong to the bala para, and therefore, so now if the para was injured or killed, as the case may be, by the goring, then when we figure out when we figure out the value of the para in order to establish the value of nezek and of chatzi nezek, we're going to include for the owner of the para, we're going to include the fact that the cow was carrying a certain amount of fat on it, because that brings up that. Now it's true that fat is caused because the fatness is that has nothing to do with the baby inside it. That's just that the owner had fattened it up. What about the question is nifchamai? What about you consider though also the value of the mother animal goes up because its bulk is larger when it's pregnant. It looks physically larger, and therefore that alone makes people more likely to want to buy the mother at a higher price. So who does that extra belong to? Who does the mazik pay the extra amount that we figure out for the fact that now the mother animal looks smaller? You could say on the one hand it belongs to the owner of the para because it's the para that's bigger or smaller now. On the other hand, the bigness was because the greater size was because of the vlad. So maybe you should pay the owner of the vlad. So Rapapa Amal Baal Para. So Rapapa says that extra amount for the bulk of the animal would go to the owner of the para, because again, the fact that it looks nicer, he would have been able to sell it at a higher price because of that. Rav Acha Breid, Rav Ika says we would divide it between the owner of the para and the owner of the vlad. The hilchsa chokin, and the halacha is in fact that we do that. There, it's even the chachamim would agree that chokin, not even just sumchos. The chachamim would agree because neither one of them is muchzik in this money in the first place anyway. The mazik obviously has to pay it. The question is, which of the two of them does he owe it to? So then we would say that chokin, because we say, in other words, we attribute half the value of the fact that the animal increases in value, that it looks physically larger and bulkier. Half of it goes to the owner of the parah, half of it goes to the owner of the vlad. That's all according to Rashi. The Ge'onim have a different, there's a tshuva from one of the Ge'onim that explains that actually this case of Pitma and Nifcha is actually the other way around. We can be talking about where the Parah itself is the one that caused the damage. Namely, you can distinguish between whether it caused the damage with Pitma, with the fact that now it's physically heavier because it's carrying a baby, so now it caused some kind of hezek with its bulk, and therefore that would definitely be on the owner of the para because the bulkiness belongs to that. On the other hand, if we say that it caused damage by its not the bulkiness so much, pitma would be by its weight. The animal physically weighs more, and with that it was able to cause, and that extra weight contributed towards the hezek. As opposed to if it's not so much the weight, it's more the bulk of the animal. For example, let's say because the animal is bulkier now, because it's carrying a baby, therefore it now caused damage because of that. Because let's say it was in a narrow area or something, and it squeezed against something that got damaged. Then we mean say chokin. What we mean is the owner of the para and the owner of the vlad would split that aspect of the nezek, and each of them would pay half of that. That's how the goyim explain it. Okay. Mishnah says, "Hakadosh shehichnis kederos of hatzav balabayis shaloi b'rishus." If a potter brings in his pots into the chotzer of a balabayis without permission, so a potter is going around selling his pots. He wants to bring them into somebody's chotzer to show his wares, but he brought them in without permission. The balabas didn't tell him come in, or maybe even the balabas explicitly told him don't come. Anyway, the shavra behemta shabalabais, if an animal belonging to the owner broke those pots, potter, then the balabais is gonna be potter because the potter had no right to bring the pots in there in the first place. The imhuzka behem, and if the animal gets injured by them, for example, trips over them, on the contrary, balak deris chayev, the owner of the pots is gonna be chayev because he created a borer. But if he brought in his pots with the permission of the Bala Chotzer, if he brought in his pots with permission, Bala Chotzer Chayev, then the owner of the Chotzer is Chayev to pay for the, if the pots get damaged, because as the Gemara is going to say, where in effect, by telling him to come in, he's telling him, I will watch your pots and make sure that my animals don't damage them. A similar case, Hichnis Perosim Chatzal Balabayis, if somebody brought in his produce, his peiros, into somebody's chotzer without rishus, and an animal belonging to the balabais ate the food, potter, then the balabais is going to be potter, same idea, because he had no right to bring the food in there. If it got injured by them, it slipped on them, for example, balapeiros chayev, then the owner of the peiros is going to be chayev, because again, he shouldn't have brought his peiros in. If he brought them in with permission, then the owner of the chotzer is going to be chayev to pay for the fruit, because again, by saying bring it in, he's saying in effect, I will watch it. And a third example, if Reuven brings in his shur into Shimon's chotzer without rishus, the nogcha shur shabalabayis, and Shimon's ox then goes and gores him, or Shimon's dog bites the shur. Either way, Shimon is going to be potter, because again, Reuven had no business bringing the shur in there. The nogachu shur shabalabais, and if Reuven's ox had gored Shimon's, then chayev, then he would be chayev to pay, because again, he had no business bringing his animal in there. There are in fact Rishonim who learn that maybe he would even be paying Nezek Shalim. Now, we've learned before the opinion of Reb Tarfon that says that in Rishus HaNizek you always pay Nezek Shalim. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is not like Reb Tarfon. However, nevertheless, the Tosfos Rid says over here that that maybe the fact is when he himself, it's one thing if his shur wandered in by itself, then we could say chatzin nezek. But here, where he brought it in himself, and then it gored, then in effect he is an odem amazik, and an odem amazik pays nezek shalom. Now, why do we need three cases in the Mishnah that seem to be basically the same thing with pots, with fruit, and with an animal? So Tosfos explains, if we only have the case of pots, you would say, you know why the owner is chayiv when he brings it in Birushus? Because after all, pots are very easily breakable. So then we could assume when he told them, bring in your pots, then he meant that I'll watch them and make sure they don't break. But Paris are not so fragile, so therefore maybe he didn't accept responsibility for them. So then we could say, fine, if the person, we might think without the Mishnah telling us, if he brought in Paris, fine, we can't be mechayev him for any injury that happens to the other animal because he brought them in Bereshus. But maybe the Balabais shouldn't be chayev to pay if his animal ate them because he didn't necessarily accept responsibility. Therefore, the Mishnah needs to tell us that it does. And on the other hand, you could also say fruit is relatively easy to get damaged or to get wounded or whatever, as opposed to a behemoth. It's much less likely that there's going to be goring or biting going on over here. So this is one of those loy zu af zu mishnayis. Each case is telling us a chidush over the previous one. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe says, B'chulon ein chayev ad shi kabel olav lishmer. Rebbe says, in all the cases, in all these three cases, I skipped a couple of lines in the Mishnah. Sorry. Continues the Mishnah. Nafal laboira v'hivish meimav. What happens if so? Now Reuven brought in his animal into Shimon's chotzer, and it fell into a burr that Shimon has in his chotzer. V'hivish es meimav, and falling in, the animal made the water dirty. Now the water was not drinkable. Chayev, then the owner of the animal is going to be chayev to pay, because again he wasn't supposed to bring his animal in there. And if the father or the son of the owner of the chotzer was inside the burr and the animal fell on them and now they were killed, Mishalem as a kofer. The owner of the animal that fell in there is going to have to pay kofer because his shur killed a person. On the face of it, our Mishnah is talking about a tam, and a tam you don't pay kofer. So we'll see in the Gemara what's going on over here, what we mean by kofer. However, if he brought in the animal with reshus, then if that animal that was brought in gets bitten or gets gored or whatever by an animal that's inside the chotzer, then the owner of the chotzer is going to be chayev because he brought it in because Reuven brought in his animal with reshus, and again by saying, bring in your animal, in effect means that I'll watch it. Rebbe says, no, the kolon ain't a chayev. In all these cases of the Mishnah, the owner of the chotzer is not going to be chayev, actually a kabbal of lishmer, unless he actually accepts on himself that he's going to watch whatever it is that you brought in. In other words, the Tanakama had been saying, by saying, bring it in, by default, you're saying, and I will watch it. Rebbe is saying, no, that's not what it means. It just means bring it in, but I'm not taking responsibility. Unless he actually says in so many words, I'm taking responsibility. Okay, so the Gemara says, let's consider the Mishnah. In the first case of the Mishnah, where he brings in his pots or his fruit or whatever without reshus. So taima del shloi b'reshus, why are we saying that the owner of the chotzer is potter if the pots are broken by his animal or whatever? Is shaloi to shaloi b'reshus, because the potter brought in his pots without reshus. Ha b'reshus, implying that if he had brought it in with reshus, loy mechayev ba'al k'deiros b'niske behemke shel chotzer. The Baal Chotzer. The implication is that the owner of the pots would not be responsible if the owner's animal tripped over it. In other words, what did we say in the Mishnah? We said the potter is chayev. Because he brought in his pots without permission. And because of because he brought them in without permission, therefore, if the shur belonging to the owner of the chotzer tripped over them, then the potter is going to be chayev because he created a bur over there. The implication is that if he brought it in birushus, he wouldn't be chayev for that. The lawyer meaning kabuli kabo bal kederes nitirus de behemta de bal chotzer. Now, so what does that mean? We don't say that when he brings it in with permission, we can say that we if he brings it in with permission, we're not saying kabuli kabo bal kederes nitirus de behemta de bal chotzer. We don't say that he's accepting on himself responsibility to watch the animal that belongs to the owner of the chotzer and make sure that it doesn't get damaged by his paws. Meaning, in other words, what do we say in the Mishnah? We had the Chachamim versus Rebbe. When we say when someone is bringing in something, when is he saying does bring it in amount to and I will watch it or not? Well, we have to consider the potter as well. He has a responsibility on the face of it to make sure that an animal doesn't go and trip over his pots and get injured. So the implication of the Mishnah is that if he brought them in with permission. And then the owner of the chotzer, his shirt tripped over them and got injured. We wouldn't say that the potter is chayev because we would say when he brought in his pots, he's not saying, well, now that I have my pots in your chotzer, I will watch them and make sure that your animal doesn't trip over them. So who would that part of the Mishnah go like? That would seem to be according to Rebbe. Where Rebbe says that when you bring in something stam, then you don't actually say that I'm accepting Shmira, then you're not accepting Shmira. So that by the same token, we would say that when the potter brings in his pots, we would say that he's only accepting that he's saying I'm bringing in my pots, but I'm not taking responsibility in case your animal trips over those pots. So that's the first part of the Mishnah seems to be according to Rebbe. Ema Seifa. Which, by the way, Maharsha points out, given what Tosfos had said before, that each case of the Mishnah is telling a greater chiddush because pots are more easily broken and fruit is more easily damaged, but a shur is not so likely to be gored. So because at least in that case, you would have a svara to say if he's bringing in his ox and he's watching it to make sure it won't gore the other one, then it means also he's watching to make sure it doesn't gore the other one. So therefore, we can apply that back to the other two cases, says Maharsha, and say that they are also, when he brings in his pots, but ashus, we would think the implication is that he's saying, not only I'm bringing in my pots, but I'll make sure that your animal doesn't trip over them. And yet the Mishnah is saying he's not doing that, and he'd in fact be potter if the animal does trip over them. Well, Ema Sefer. But then in that case, look at the next part of the Mishnah. We said that if he brings him in with Rishus, then the owner of the Chotzer is Chayev to pay for the breakage of the pots. Now there, the owner of the Chotzer didn't say anything about, I'll watch the pots. Asan Rabbanan. That part works out only according to the Chachamim. The Amri B'Stamen Nabi Kabuli Kabula and Terusa. Where the Chachamim say that even without specifying, you've accepted responsibility for them. Well, then in the Reisha, then we should have said by the same token that the potter, if he's the mazik because the animal trips over his pots, then we should say he's chayev because when he brought in his pots, the implication is that he's going to watch and make sure that he doesn't cause a hezek through them. So far we have the beginning of the Mishnah seems to be like Rebbe, the middle of the Mishnah seems to be like the Chachamim, and then the two, and furthermore, let's look at the end of the Mishnah, when it says, Rebbe Omer B'kulan Ein Chayev Ad She Kabel Al Bala Bayis Lishmer, where Rebbe says that in all cases, he's Chayev to pay only if the Bala Bayis accepted responsibility to watch it. So what do you have over here? Reish of a Sefer Rebbe, Umetziyosa Rabbanon. Do we have a Mishnah over here that starts according to Rebbe? Then in the middle, it presents the Chachamim's opinion, and then it goes back to saying Rebbe's opinion. That's not the usual way that a Mishnah is structured. Now Tosfos does point out the consideration that after all you do have you could say that when you bring in the pots And fine, you bring him in Bereshus, and you are saying that the potter maybe is accepting responsibility on him. But fine, you would say that maybe it's much less likely for the animal to be injured by the pots than it is for the pots to be injured by the animal. So Tosfos discusses that a little bit. The fact is, the first part of the Mishnah does fit better according to Rebbe. And then we would say that the Mishnah also mentions, by the way, it mentions im huzka behem balak deres chayev. It mentions that if the animal was injured by them, then the owner of the pots would be chayev. So that really fits better. That really fits better according to Rebbe. It's hard to say that the whole Mishnah would be talking about according to the Chachamim and talking about shaloi, but and saying that what is he that when we say shaloi bereshus means that the owner of the chotzer would be potter if his animals damage them. It's a little hard to say that. The fact is, in each of the cases of the Mishnah, we seem to be distinguishing one is chayev, one is potter, rather than saying that both of them are potter or something like that. Anyway, so how do we reconcile the Mishnah? It seems that the Mishnah is beginning according to Rebbe's opinion and continuing according to the Chachamim, and then going back to Rebbe. Pnei Yeshua explains somewhat differently. He says the fact that the Mishnah has to say that the owner of the pots is chayev if the animal got injured by them. Obviously, he made a burr over there in somebody else's chotzer, so of course he should be chayev. So therefore, the implication must be that if he did it bereshus, then he'd be potter, and that would be a point of Rebbe. So what's the deal with our Mishnah? So Amar Rav Zeira, Tavra. So Rav Zeira says, as a matter of fact, yeah, it's a stira one to another. Misha Shanazu Lo Shanazu. The one who taught the first part of the Mishnah didn't teach the second part. Meaning, yes, the two cases of the Mishnah are according to different Tanoim. The first part, where it says that if he brought it in Shaloi Bereshus, then the owner of the pots is chayev for anything that happens to the animal, from which we inferred that if he brought him in Bereshus, he would be potter. He would hold that the Chacham and Rebbe don't disagree on such a point. And on the other hand, the second part of the Mishnah that says that if he gave him permission to bring it in and the animal damaged the pots, then he's chayev. That would be specifically according to the Chachamim that when you say bring them in, then it means that I'm accepting responsibility to watch them. So yes, so Rav Zeira says the fact is the Mishnah, we have to understand the Mishnah as talking according to two different Tanoim. On the other hand, Rava Amar Kula Rabbanan. Rava says no. The entire Mishnah can be made to work according to the Rabbanan until you get to the part where Rebbe says his opinion. Because we are talking about where he gave him permission to bring it in. But nevertheless, we can say Shmiras Kedavis Kibbalale Balachotzer. When we say according to the Chachamim that when he says bring in your pots and I'll watch them, it means not only that I'll watch them, that my animal won't injure them, that my animal won't damage them, Bafilu Nishburu Baruach, even if they got damaged by the wind, in a way where it was a pshia, where he allowed them to be someplace careless, where they're going to get damaged. Then in effect he's like a shomer chinam. So then he'd be chayev to pay. So therefore, what Rava is saying is that when he says bring it in means I will watch it. On the other hand, so now the owner of the pots didn't accept on himself any particular responsibility. Here we were assuming in the question that when he brings it in Bereshus, each one of them is accepting a certain degree of responsibility. The Bala Chotzer to watch them and the Bala Kderis to make sure that it doesn't cause a hazard. No, now Rava is saying that according to the Chachamim, when he brings it in Bereshus, and we're saying that he's potter, we're saying that if now the Bala Chotzer's ox trips over them and gets injured, then the potter is potter. The reason is because the owner of the Chotzer has accepted full responsibility, and the potter has not accepted any responsibility. So that would be why we're mechayev only the Bala Chotzer and not the owner of the pots. Okay, so that way we can make the Mishnah work according to everybody, or at least that all of it works according to the Chacham. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Hichnis Peros of Hatzah Balabayis, we said if he brought in his Peros and we talked about the case where the animal got injured by them, so it tripped over them, it slipped on them. So then we said the owner of the Peros is going to be Chayev because, again, he brought him in Bershul of Bershus. However, Omar Rav, Loshano El Shahuchlik of ahead. Rav says that would only apply if the animal slipped on the Peros and got injured by that. Aval Ochla. But if the animal ate the Paris and they were no good for it and it died or got injured because of that, Potter, then the owner of the Paris would be Potter. My time, because after all, the animal didn't have to eat so much in a way that it caused that it was going to get damaged. It caused the damage to itself. So therefore, you can't be Machayev, the one who brought in the Paris for that. He didn't accept Shemira. He didn't say, I'm going to watch and make sure that the animal doesn't eat. That the animal doesn't eat it. If he had accepted such a responsibility, then of course he'd be chayev. But here, he didn't accept such responsibility. So therefore, you can't be mechayev him. And he can say to the other guy, "Look, your animal. It's not my problem that your animal went and overate from these peiros and died from that." Tosfos adds the point, in other words, that since the miskaven maybe all of Dover Shemazikoi, the animal itself deliberately goes and brings on itself something that causes it, has it, so you can't be Machayev, the owner of the Paris, for that. However, Omer of Sheshes, but of Sheshes disagrees with that. He says, Amina, I would have to say, Kinayim Vashochim Rav Omer Lahoshmaita. Rav must have said this when he was about to fall asleep. It can't be right. The Chavis Yor, as a Tshuva, where he talks about various things, where we find the Chachamim use harsh or even derogatory expressions one towards another, and he mentions this one, and he says, actually, Rav Sheshes was a Talmud of Rav. So he says Rav Sheshes is not saying this out of disrespect to Rav. Adrab, he's saying it as an expression of respect. He's saying this statement is so obviously wrong that I can't believe that Rav would have said it when he's conscious. It must have been Rav was on the verge of falling asleep, and then he said something like this, because he wouldn't possibly have said something like this when he was thinking straight. You even find there are places in the Gemara where the word Naim means about to pass away, so Rav Sheshes may even mean, according to that, it may even mean that Rav was on the verge of death when he said this, and therefore he wasn't thinking as clearly as he usually would. Anyway, Rav Sheshes says it can't be right. D'tanya, we learn in a brisa. If Reuven puts poison in front of Shimon's animal and Shimon eats it, potter medina adam mechayev medina shemayim. So Reuven is going to be potter from human judgment, but he's going to be chayev to repay Shimon because of dinei shemayim, to be yotze from Hashem's judgment. So sama mavasu delay avida da'achla, only when it's poison, where it's not normal for an animal to eat that, then you would say that he's potter. Aval peiros, but Rav Sheshes says the implication is that he put fruit in front of it, da'avida, produce, da'avida da'achla, which is normal enough for an animal to eat, then v'dine adam nami mechayev, he would be chayev v'dine adam as well. V'amai, now why would he be chayev? According to Rav's logic, why shouldn't we say the animal didn't have to eat it, and it's not my problem that it ate it? So why is the braisa implying that it'd be chayev b'dine shemayim case? So the Gemara says Amri. So the Bnei Hayishiv answered, "Who adin afilu peiros?" As a matter of fact, no, the din would not apply only to some of us, to poison. It would apply to peiros as well. Nami potim dinu adam. He would also be potter from dinu adam. The chiddush of the braisa mentioning poison, even when it comes to poison, where it's not normal for an animal to eat it, still the person who put the poison is chayev b'dinei shemayim, because if, as far as dinei shemayim, he can't use the excuse it shouldn't have eaten. The boy sema. So on the contrary, then this braisa doesn't contradict Rav. The braisa means that whether it was peiros or whether it was some of us, either way, the same rule applies. Another possibility, you could say the samamavas, the poison that we're talking about, we're not talking about poison that an animal is not normally going to be attracted to. We're talking about a kind of grass. Which is normal for an animal to eat, but it's normal for an animal to eat grass, and this particular kind of herb happens to be poisonous to the animal, which there are such things. So therefore, dahino peri. So therefore, in effect, that's the same thing as fruit. So there, Rav is saying, the animal didn't have to eat it, therefore you put them in dina adam. But nevertheless, you'd be chayv dina shemayim, because you shouldn't have put it out there. And Tosfos says, in that case, then the point is, even though now with Paris, at least you could say it eats, it overeats, it gets a stomachache or whatever, but here you have it, it's poison, it actually gets killed, and nevertheless, we're still saying that you're part of Indian army. So therefore, no contradiction against it. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Maisvi, I have another contradiction against Rav. A braisa describes a case where a woman goes into somebody else's chotzer to grind wheat, and she doesn't have permission. So here we're talking about, in other words, this person regularly goes and rents out his millstones for people to grind over there. But here, this woman did not wait for permission; she just walked in over there. An animal belonging to the balabais ate her wheat. Potter, then the balachotzer is potter because he didn't take any responsibility. If the animal became sick from eating the wheat, then the woman is chayev. Now according to Rav, why? Name a havalo shalai teichel. Why can't the woman say that your animal didn't have to eat this wheat? Why is that my problem? So the answer is Amri. So they answered back, so what? You bring a question from the Braisa. Why is the Braisa any stronger than the Mishnah? We said in the Mishnah that we're talking about not where the animal, Rav is explaining that what's the case where the owner of the Paris is Chayev is where the animal slipped on them. Well, by the same, as opposed to when it ate them, it would be Potter. So the same way, when we're saying that the animal was Huzga on the wheat, doesn't mean that it ate it. It means that it slipped on it. It means that the woman put down her wheat and the animal slipped on it and got injured. That's a good point. So the one who brought this question up, what was it? Why didn't he even bother bringing it up? Didn't he realize that you can answer the Braisa the same way as the Mishnah? And the answer is Amalach, because the Makshin will tell you the Shlema Masnisin to Katani Imhuzka Bahen, because the Mishnah had used the expression that the animal was injured by them. So by them means shehuchalka b'henhu, means that it slipped on them. Aval hocha katoni imhuzka. But the Braisa just says if it was injured, v'loy katoni b'hen, it doesn't say in them. So you would think achilahu to katoni. So the Braisa maybe is talking about eating them. Huzka b'hen would mean it was nizik in them in any way. Huzka b'hen implies that it was directly injured by them, namely that it tripped on them. So this Machshon thought there is a valid reason to ask from this Braisa. There does seem to be a clear implication from the wording of the Braisa that it's somewhat different than the Mishnah, that in fact there's a difference whether the animal ate them, that in fact the same din would apply even if the animal ate them. The Idach, so the Gemara that's giving the answer, the Tarzan that's giving the answer, Amalach Loishno, he's going to say no, there's no distinction. It doesn't matter whether it says the word Behen or not. Either way, we can explain the Mishnah and the Braisa as referring to the animal slipped on them. Okay, the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring another proof about this din of Rav. A Braisa says Hichnis Shur L'Chatzah Balabayis Shalai B'Rashus. If somebody brought in his shur into somebody else's chotzer without permission, V'Ochol Chitin, and the animal ate wheat, the Hitriz, and that gave the animal a stomachache because Hitriz, strictly speaking, means the animal developed diarrhea. But whatever, the point is that the wheat was bad for it. Wheat contains gluten, and animals aren't capable of handling that. Anyway, ummes, and the animal ended up dying. Potter, then the owner of the chotzer is potter because again, you brought in your wheat without permission. V'im hichnes b'rashus, but if he brought it in with permission, bala chotzer chayev, then the owner of the chotzer is chayev. Again, according to the Chachamim Bar Mishnah, that he accept that by saying bring it in, he's accepting responsibility. Now, if it ate, now here it says clearly that it ate it. V'amai, now according to Rav, why should the bala chotzer be chayev? Havelei shelo yochal. Or in the first case, rather, we're talking about the one who brought in his shur. Why is he chayev? Why would the owner of the chotzer be chayiv if he told him, bring in your shur? Why can't he say, fine, you brought in your shur. Nobody said your shur had to eat my wheat. It's not my problem that it ate my wheat, and therefore that made it sick and it died. The answer is, you're trying to bring a contradiction between a case of birshus versus not birshus. Because the same way, Rava is using the same logic as before, when he said, when you have the shus to bring in your pots, then the owner of the chotzer is accepting responsibility, even that the pots shouldn't be injured by side things, for example, by the wind, the same way over here, when he says, bring in your shur, means that according to the Chachamim, he's accepting full responsibility of afilu chonakas atzmai, even if the animal were to strangle itself, and the bala chotzer is responsible for that, so that he did something that made that happen, so therefore he would be chayev. So the same way over here, when it ate the wheat, we can't say, and then that made it sick and it died. So now we would say the same kind of idea over here. Meaning Tosfa says that Rava was saying before, it wasn't just a dichui ba'alma. We weren't just using it to push off something to say that to try to explain why the Mishnah is not partly according to Rebbe and partly according to the Chachamim. Now we're saying Rava actually holds this way, that when you say bring in your shur, it means you're accepting full responsibility for everything that happens with that shur, including even a side thing. And therefore, yes, you can say that, he's taking responsibility, even that the shur shouldn't eat. And if it does, then we can be mechayev him for the fact that he didn't prevent the animal from eating. But when the other person brought in the shur, shaloi b'rashus, then we can say, hoyalo shaloi teichel, then we can say you didn't have it. When you brought in your peiros, shaloi b'rashus, then you can say, hoyalo shaloi teichel, like Rava says, like Rav says. So we're left with that. Yes, we do accept what Rav says. We do consider the case of a hoyal ashloi teichal. We do say that when the animal was injured by eating something that it shouldn't, we can say that it's your fault. You didn't have to allow your animal to eat it unless it was birashus, unless the animal was brought in birashus, and birashus was saying according to the Chachamim, then you're accepting full responsibility, which we'll continue talking about various aspects of that tomorrow, Bez Hashem.